Hi, everybody. It's Vox Pop, page two. Welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. Next year on Election Day, we'll elect our next president, but this year it's all about local elections and local issues from the Albany County Executive and the $196 million high school renovation proposal. Pardon me. To the mayoral races in Troy, Schenectady, Saratoga, Pittsfield, Chicopee, Holyoke, Springfield, and beyond. Local politics is at the forefront of our minds today. That's why we brought in our star. And he is our star, and he is a guy who we love, really love. Associate editor Mike Spain, who is with us on the panel so often and who just we rely on. And also, New England Newspaper's VP of News, my friend, and I don't mean old friend, but my old friend, Kevin Moran, from the Berkshire Eagle and from New England Newspapers, Vice President of News, Kevin. What local issues are you going to go to the polls about today? Why is it important to vote in local elections? 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, so Mike, let's start out. Where are the big races in the region? Now, I've always believed, as a political scientist, that the closer you get to having to deliver services, the more risk you take.
Absolutely.
If your police department stinks, if your education system is no good, if there are rats in the street, mayors get held responsible for that.
That's right. And many cities in the greater capital region will be electing mayors. Not all of them. Albany's mayor is not up for re-election this year. But in Troy, Saratoga Springs, the city of Schenectady, they'll be choosing mayors. In some cases, you have incumbents running for re-election. And in Troy, you'll be getting a new mayor. And we also have many towns, have town supervisors, town council members, city council members. But the big race in the city of Albany is actually for the schools, as you mentioned, a $196 million plan to renovate and upgrade and expand and modernize the Albany High School. And that's a big one.
Has the TU taken an editorial position on that?
Yes, we have. Our position has been that while there are questions about it, we complained about the way the school district promoted it and left a lot of unanswered questions. We did look at it in depth. We asked them questions. They did get us answers when we posed the questions. And while there are still some unknowns about how it will play out, we are urging people to support it. We think that the city of Albany's students and families deserve a 21st century school. The school has, which was built in the 70s, has lots of structural problems, and it does not service the growing population of the city school.
Sure. In my hometown of Great Barrington, the vote, pardon me, never eat a cracker before you do this, but that the voters turned down the high school renovation. Similar circumstances. I was appalled, but they did.
Well, yeah. $196 million is quite a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
Our columnist, our Metro columnist, Chris Churchill, has been quite critical of the plan, questioning whether you could do a lot and achieve most of the goal with maybe a third less or maybe half as much money. And city residents are reluctant to go into debt. A lot of people are saying instead of putting the money into brick and mortar, they should put it into programs. But you need a facility that will safely
allow that.
Right.
Okay. Mike Spain, thank you so much for starting us off on that. Also on the line with us is our wonderful friend Kevin Moran. So, Kevin, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. How you doing, Mike?
Great, Kevin. Good to hear you.
It is indeed. So, Kevin, there are a couple of big races up there in the immediate area in Western Massachusetts. We got Pittsfield. We've certainly got a major mayoral election there. We've got one in North Adams. What else you got?
Obviously, those are the heavyweight elections. I mean, these are the title bouts, so to speak. The what you just mentioned, the mayor race in Pittsfield and the mayoral race in North Adams, Mass. There are also some, obviously city council races in Pittsfield and in North Adams as well. And there's some school committees in both cities, too. Those are the, these are the voting towns today. the ones with the, you know, the contest and the election. But by all means, it's the mayor's races that have had our letters to the editors page buzzing, people talking. It's got Facebook lit up, and, you know, campaign signs galore, you know, throughout Pittsfield and North Adams. It's been, you know, quite hotly contested races up until this point.
Kevin, are these grudge matches? In other words, when I say grudge matches, how vitriolic has the whole thing gotten?
You know, on a scale of 1 to 5, I don't know. Sometimes it feels like it's about 4.5.
Yeah.
On that scale, I think it's been interesting to watch. I think with the, now that you have social media as quite a, you know, a viable community conversation place, you know, that tends to get just crazy anyway. But it's, you know, it's been robust in the traditional places, you know, on the town squares, like I said, in the letters to the editor page, you know, columns and, you know, and editorial endorsements, you name it. I would say, about 4.5. How about that?
Well, 4.5 is quite vitriolic, I can tell you that much right now. And, you know, it's interesting because cities quite frequently, New York City has gone through it, others have gone through it, have to make up their mind between the feet on the ground, you know, guys who run their cities carefully, and the progressives who come out to be, let's do fewer arrests, let's not do crimes against, property in the same way we did before. I think to some degree that's the case in Pittsfield, isn't it, Mike? I'm sorry, I meant Kevin. Kevin?
It is. I think, you know, we still have these overarching issues actually in both towns, but in Pittsfield especially, it's been crime's been a big topic, for instance. So we have those overarching issues. But, there's a big rivalry going on in Pittsfield between the current mayor, Dan Bianchi, and the city clerk who's running against him, Linda Tyer. So there's that. And it's a small town. You know where the battle lines are drawn. You know the folks who are on one side or the other. Perhaps in larger races, it's a little harder to define as easily. But so politics is very local here in Pittsfield and North Adams.
Right. And North Adams, Mayor John Barrett, who I once referred to as Mayor for Life, and who was the longest serving, I think, mayor in Massachusetts for a long time.
Yeah. Up until that point, yes.
Yes. Is now, I use the word grudge match, coming back against the guy who beat him, right?
Yeah, that's true. The current incumbent mayor, Dick Alkenbright, actually defeated and put an end to John Barrett III's 24-year reign as mayor of North Adams. So that one, you know, I guess it is a grudge match, as you brought up earlier.
Okay.
That one clearly is.
Okay, and very quickly, let's go to Terrence in Albany. All right, 1-800-348-2551. Terrence, we're going to keep it short because we got to go to a break, but go ahead.
Sure. Just want to make one clarification on the high school initiative. While the total construction cost is $196 million, the actual cost to the taxpayers, I believe, is only about $72 million because of state aid that would go towards that construction.
That's correct. They're also converting over some older bonds so that they'll be paying off some bonds in exchange for, you know, continuing new bonding.
So, Terrence, you got a horse in the race?
I do have a horse in the race, yes. I'm definitely a supporter of the renovations to the high school. I think they're needed. Not only are they needed, but I think that if they don't do them, they'll end up spending more money because you'll spend about $100 million to repair the existing building, and you won't get any of the benefits of the programmatic changes.
Okay. Terrence, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much. We are going to take a short break. We will be right back, guys.
Support comes from Lori Ilvesacker, Coldwell Banker, Village Green Realty, Woodstock, a professional realtor with 30 years of experience, specializing in the greater Woodstock area home market and in finding acreage for building new. 845-901-6129. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades. ShannonRose.com. Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, interimhealthcare.com. And Nine Pin Cider, serving New York hard ciders made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Saturday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary. Consider the apple. NinePinCider.com.
And we are back. Our very good friend Kevin Moran out of the Berkshires and Mike Spain right here sitting across from me. We got an email. Hi, Vox Pop. Could you please ask Mike to explain the referendum question about the Albany County Charter that is on the ballot today? Mike?
Well, there's a proposed charter that would change and update Albany County, the way that it operates, and local laws, and clean up a lot of language that's in the charter. It's the culmination of a multi-year process where you had an independent charter review committee make recommendations and hold hearings. However, critics complain that it really doesn't lower the number of legislators. Albany County is among the highest per capita in the state for county legislators versus the population. I think Dutchess County was up there and lowered it at one point. They have 39 legislators.
How much they make, you know?
Actually, I don't.
Yeah, I knew I was going to embarrass you. I'm sorry.
Yes, no problem. But many feel that is unworkable. It should be more right-sized. And the charter committee had proposed that, bringing it down to somewhere in the 20s. Yet, that is not what's going before the voters. There's some flexibility in adjusting that number over time. And it doesn't set up an independent reapportionment committee. Yeah. And Albany County's had two major expensive million-dollar legal settlements for having done reapportionments that did not appropriately represent the minority community.
So does it do anything good?
Well, it cleans up some language.
You told us all the things it didn't do.
Right. It cleans up some language, and it kind of lets the Democrats who control the county legislature stay in control.
Kevin, I wanted to ask you a question about Pittsfield. By the way, the telephone number is 1-800-348-2551 that I've never quite understood. Pittsfield is one of the most beautiful cities in the country, if not the world. You got the lake, you've got the mountains, you've got, you know, more theater than anybody deserves to have. It's so wonderful. And yet, it's a city that has been plagued, you know, by trouble. And not only that, it is, you know, you got crime, you got other stuff that make, you got drugs, a lot of drugs. And I've just never really understood what goes on. Why Pittsfield, of all places, with everything it has going for it, is a difficult place. And to just go on for one more second, why they have on a fairly regular basis insisted on throwing their mayors out.
Well, yeah, I guess you just kind of, you did lay it out there. No, I think you're right. Pittsfield, I think over the past 10 years or so, has been a city in transition. There's no doubt that when General Electric ran Pittsfield, in essence, as a company town, that life back then was much, much different. Perhaps just as challenging, but as certainly in different ways compared to how it is now. Today's challenges are certainly different. But we're also going through, you're right, I should point out that in terms of arts and theater and culture, I mean, that's really hot now in Pittsfield and has been for the past 10 plus years. But at the same token, too, you know, GE has left. And, you know, recently we had some really bad news that Sadek Innovative Plastics, which was the successor company to the General Electric plastics plant, said that it's going to pick up and move its 300 workers out of Pittsfield and put them, consolidate them into Texas. You know, that is reminiscent of those awful years when GE downsized and closed and what have you. You know, it's interesting to note that, you know, one of the big talking points in the race this time, and perhaps even more so in the two previous elections, has been what to do with the William Stanley Business Park, which is essentially the footprint of the former General Electric plant. And most of the buildings are gone there, and it still kind of is out there like a big reminder, a big concrete pad reminder of what the city was like, and certainly it's a reminder of the blueprint of what plans might be there at one point someday.
And Mike, you know, you live in Schenectady, right?
That's right.
And I've always wondered about the parallelism between Pittsfield and Schenectady.
A lot of similarities. I mean, what you're talking about, Kevin, could be said about the city of Schenectady. Although things are a little different now, they've been successful in recent years through a couple of reasons, primarily the county taxing authority known as Metroplex that has been able to spur downtown development and help with the resurgence of Proctor's Theater, which has been key in the downtown redevelopment. Lots of restaurants have opened. And now they're taking the north end of downtown and completely doing it over to host a casino, one of the four casinos that are coming to New York and are being licensed by the state. And with that is a couple of hotels, a marina, some housing, and some other commercial properties that are being developed. Things look like they're doing pretty well. That's on a former industrial site along the Mohawk River that GE did occupy for a while, but GE still has a presence in town, not nearly like it was in the past, but a former company town that was once the headquarters for General Electric no longer has found other ways to do it. They're still facing the same problems, Alan, you talked about. They have, you know, they have drugs. They have violence on the street. The neighborhoods, some neighborhoods, are not resurging, are not feeling the benefit that downtown has had. Mayor Gary McCarthy, who's coming to the end of his first term and seeking a second term, admits that that's the most difficult thing to turn around. There's efforts to get rid of these zombie buildings. He's been a big supporter of that, buildings that are just crumbling in certain neighborhoods, and try to make the property available for resale and redevelopment. He's being challenged by the fella he beat 4 years ago, Roger.
Yeah, this is a grudge match. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, people will call it that. It's certainly a referendum on McCarthy's first term, because in the last election, Roger Hall, the former president of Union College, who lives in the city and is very active in the community, started an independent party, got the Republican Party to back him against Democrat McCarthy, and came within 100 votes of winning that election. And right now, this election will determine whether people are now satisfied with McCarthy or they want to unseat him and give Hall a try. Hall, of course, complains about the same things that McCarthy does, that the neighborhoods need more revitalization, and he's got a few different plans for that. But pretty much, with a few exceptions on public safety issues, they agree what the city needs is more tax-producing properties and more development and more help for the neighborhoods.
So let me ask you both this question. What about turnout? You know, we know that the presidential elections are generally the best attended elections, and that when you go down, even though, as I said when we opened, it's terribly important whether you have rats in the street, whether your garbage is collected, whether we know that very few people actually show up, except that this year in both the cities that you guys are talking about, people have come to expect a close race, and that sometimes brings people out.
Yeah, sometimes it does. How has the turnout been traditionally in local, just the off midterm elections, whatever the term for this is, local elections, you know, in Massachusetts?
Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, it. You know, obviously, it helps to have a contested race. 2 years ago, in Pittsfield's last election, the incumbent ran uncontested, so turnout was low. You know, the 2 years before that, when you had, you know, two newcomers coming to the mayor's race, turnout was very high. I'd be surprised if turnout was any less than maybe 60, 65%.
That's a good
I think
turnout.
That would be even on a
65% would be amazing.
Yeah. I think it's gonna. I think these are really hot races. You know, between Barrett and Alcabright and North Adams, and between Bianchi and Tyre in Pittsfield.
Yeah.
So you need a race. I mean, it's really troubling that so few people participate in democracy. They said last year during the midterm elections it was the lowest turnouts for a federal election year since 1942. But in New York State, the turnout, we were electing every single assembly and Senate seat. We were also picking all the Congress seats. Turnout was 28-29% in New York State.
And that's because I think there's so much incumbency protection, IPP, mm-hmm. the incumbent protection plan, that people say, and also they don't much respect the legislature. So they say, you know, it's a den of thieves, and I don't want to go out. It's too bad because it's what I've tried to deal with all of my adult life and teaching kids and talking about what the returns on participation, you know, are.
Let's think about this, too, is the fact that we're only talking about those folks who are actually registered to vote. I can't remember the statistics, but a colleague of mine recently shed some light on some statistics that showed that a surprisingly few number of people eligible to register to vote in Pittsfield are actually registered to vote. Sure. So we're actually talking about an even smaller percentage of those who should be expressing their themselves at the ballot box.
There's a lot of proposals to improve ballot access, and different states that allow longer periods for people to cast their ballots or let people mail their ballots in. In New York, you have to take out an absentee ballot and say that you have a reason why you can't make it to the polls, but they just make that available in other states to anybody who wants to mail their vote in.
Same-day registration.
Same-day registration would be a big step. How is it in Massachusetts? Is it all same-day voting, or do they allow voting ahead of time? Do they have any other means?
The only thing you can do is you can vote by absentee.
As New York.
Presuming that you're on a business or on a vacation somewhere.
Right.
Well, I never got asked that, but I have regularly voted because I have, it's like Santa Claus and Christmas. I've regularly had to be here. So mm-hmm. I have done that.
You've been out of state.
Yeah. let's go to Richard in Schenectady. All right, Richard, 1-800-348-2551. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I know a lot of people aren't necessarily good at math, so I have a little bit more of a mathematical perspective on the cost of this project for the Albany High School.
Yep.
First, it raises the cost expectation or the standard for all local school capital projects to come. Secondly, one fellow said only $72 million would be paid by taxpayers. That's incorrect. It's all paid by taxpayers. I think he meant locally.
A good point. He means from Albany City taxpayers, City of Albany School District.
I think we could take it, Richard, that you're not for it.
Well, I, if it's necessary, it's necessary, but I think the cost is too high. Now, here's another consideration, that if the state pays 70%, 80%, 90% of these projects, this means that we state residents are paying the same percentages for school capital projects all over the state.
That's correct, I believe. I mean, when the state approves of the project, if you put up something they don't want put up, they won't pitch in at that level.
Well, and I have to say, Richard and Mike and Kevin, in my little town of Great Barrington, we took the money for the Main Street reconstruction. But with the money came all kinds of demands. We did things, in my opinion, we never should have been doing. We have lights that are traffic light stanchions that look like they are part of the U.S. defense budget. They're so big. So sometimes...
Not aesthetically pleasing to you, Alan?
No, not for the greatest small town in America, according to the Smithsonian Magazine. But Richard, you make some very good points.
I've got two more.
Go ahead.
Can I? If somebody were to take and make tally marks, and they made 1,960 of them, each one would be worth $100,000. So, somebody might want to start trying to do that and think about how much it is. And the last one is, will there be enough money left after all this money is spent for this to provide the services that are more likely to raise the graduation rate, which is, around 50% at the...
The city school district in Albany has a tragically sad, low graduation rate. It needs to make improvements in the program. I think that a school, having a 21st century school with adequate facilities that are safe and that are enhance education, is necessary. The big question is whether almost $200 million, no matter where you get it from, is really justified. I think Chris Churchill, our columnist, had said that would make it the second highest high school construction project in the United States.
Whoa, that's a lot. Yeah. Richard, do you have anything in terms of what you're going to do or did?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
On the budget. Well,
how are you
voting?
Well, I'm in Schenectady, so I can't vote on that budget.
But I am
concerned about the welfare of the educational welfare of poor students all across the state.
Sure. Hey, Richard, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Right. We'll go to Jeff in Gardner. Jeff, you're going to ask a question we don't know the answer to. Go ahead.
Well, it's just I had such a bad reaction when voting just this afternoon.
Right.
And reading very carefully the instructions, if there's any stray mark on the sheet that nullifies the card. So I'm thinking, boy, that would be an easy way for a corrupt district to just nullify a lot of votes, just go around putting a stray mark anywhere on the card.
Go ahead. I just wanted to ask you, what is the methodology of voting? Do you use a machine and pull down a lever?
They got the machine. Yeah.
Is it a scanner?
In the last place I lived for 20, yes, I had to feed it through a scanner. In the last place I lived 25 years, we had the old mechanical one up until just a couple years ago. But I was so disheartened to see those new ones because of the movie Hacking Democracy shows how easily the equipment is designed to be easy to hack and just print out whatever results somebody wants it to print out. It doesn't bother counting the votes. Or it certainly doesn't report the number of votes that were placed.
So, Mike and Kevin, have either of you done stories in your papers on hacking?
Well, there were concerns when scanners, you know, paper scanners that you use conventionally now to vote, were going to be not as safe and hackable or hijackable or whatever you want to call it, and manipulated. And those fears were allayed because you could keep the paper as a backup, but the systems that were developed met a standard that the states established that that were accurate, and it would store them on the machine, and there was accountability and quality control, and if anything went wrong with the computer, you could just go back and count the paper ballots, and it would be your way of keeping track. Sure. They hack credit cards all the time. The Chinese hack into U.S. corporations all the time. It's a legitimate fear, and it requires public officials to take all due steps to ensure the integrity of the system.
Yeah, there's always been cheating.
Isn't it true that the actual workings of the machine is considered to be, I can't think of the word now, it's protected because it's...
Encryption?
Encrypted?
No, it's, you know, your company protects the information that's private to the company because you don't want some other company coming out with the same exact machine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Proprietary information have to reveal.
Jeff, hold on one second. I want to go to Kevin. Kevin, you have anything on this?
Yeah, I can't really think of any big problems that at least Berkshire County has had in recent years, but I can tell you that, some of the equipment in some of the towns in the Berkshires is really low tech. I know that, for instance, in New Ashford, Massachusetts, which used to be had the distinction of casting the first vote in the United States, much like Dixfield Notch does today in the presidential elections, still uses its way old hand crank wooden ballot box to do things. So, we're not facing those problems.
Hey guys, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but we got to take a break. Thank you very much, and we'll be right back. Thank you very much.
Support comes from Mango Tree Imports, Saratoga Springs, New York, announcing their new location in the Saratoga Marketplace at 554 Broadway. Open 7 days a week, mangotreeimports.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, maintaining 32 miles of trails throughout the Lake George region for hiking, biking, and outdoor exploration. HikeLakeGeorge.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. And Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement. A proud supporter of public radio, FortHillAutoBody.com.
So Mike Spain of the Times Union and Kevin Moran of New England Newspapers. I guess I wanted to ask a question to Mike. We got this email. In my town, every name on the working families line was also on the Democratic line. Does it make any difference which party line one votes for? If not, does the Working Families Party or similar ones have any reason to exist? A profound, profound message.
It is. And as a political scientist, you could certainly address the value in New York State of this odd system where you can have various political parties endorsing you. People make up the names of political parties. Rob Astorino, who unsuccessfully challenged Governor Andrew Cuomo in the last gubernatorial race, created a Common Core, Stop Common Core party, you know, and it probably brought some votes. All the votes that come in for you on all of these lines get added up, and some people might rather consider themselves conservatives, others might consider themselves more moderate and vote for you on different lines, and it might help you win. In the city of Troy, interestingly, that's not the case. You have two people who are Democrats, essentially. You have Rodney Wilshire, who is an incumbent Democratic councilman, and he is running against three other people, including Patrick Madden, who is the Democratic Party's nominee, who won a Democratic primary over Wilshire. But Wilshire has the backing of the Workers' Family Party also, and he's saying, I'm a Democrat running on the Workers' Family Party, vote for me. And then there's a Republican, Jim Gordon, and there's also an independent, a fellow, Jack Cox, who started his own revolutionary party. It's somewhat of a quixotic race, many people believe there.
Sometimes it can make you sick. I mean, I remember in one year, both in Saratoga, I believe, and Hudson, New York, the people who were basically running the Democratic Party decided to run for office. And when they didn't get the nomination, they became a third party, and the third party meant that the Republicans won.
Yes, it can backfire on you. It can have all kinds of implications. Sometimes your opponents will stick have someone else run on a third party to suck
away
votes from you.
That, I think, it's against the law, but
well,
I think they do it.
Well, it happens.
Yeah, you're right.
If it were to happen openly, it would be illegal and a violation of election law. But the other impact of this is if a third party gets enough votes, they can get automatic placement on the ballot like the Workers' Family Party did. The Liberal Party used to get a lot of votes and don't anymore.
The Liberal Party always was the sort of liberal branch. If you wanted to hold your nose and not vote for the Democrats, you voted for the Liberals. And then the Liberals got so bad, the Liberal Party got to be such a closely held fiefdom by a few characters that was the end of the Liberal Party.
And so has the Conservative Party with the Republican Party in New York
State. But now, interestingly, we find a different kind of situation because we saw Zephyr Teachout try to run at the Working Families Party, and except that Mayor de Blasio, but he's sorry now, came up and insisted that Andrew Cuomo get the nomination. And some of the union groups came and saved Cuomo's hide. So it's possible that if you vote on the Working Families Party, you are basically saying, you know, we're not entirely happy with what the Democrats are doing, you know, in this state. I suppose that's the most you could get out of it.
Yeah, they tend to embrace many of the ideals of Democrats, or maybe progressive Democrats, for sure. And they're big players. They're a big player in Troy. It's a big toss-up. It could, maybe Democrats might vote for Wilshire on the Workers' Family Party, and not enough Democrats will vote for Madden, and that might tip it to the Republican Jim Gordon. So it'll be a close night, perhaps, in Troy, one to watch very closely.
Kevin, one of the things I wonder about a lot in Massachusetts is how could it be that in a blue state, like a real blue state like Massachusetts, Republican governors keep getting elected? What does that tell us about politics in Massachusetts?
It's probably because the House and the Senate are overwhelmingly Democratic that I think the idea of a GOP governor as a sort of a minder or a caretaker of checks and balances, in essence, to both the legislature, it appeals to a lot of Massachusetts residents and voters. And by the same token, too, when you talk about a Massachusetts Republican in general, you are not talking about someone who is uber conservative. You are talking about the old school New England type of Republican candidates. So these are not ultra conservative.
Except one of them gets at all. Except Kevin, one of them gets the nomination and runs for president of the United States.
Well, then he became a conservative in order to do that.
Exactly. He was not a conservative when he was governor of Massachusetts, as borne out by the fact that he adopted the precursor to Obamacare here in Massachusetts.
Romney Care. Yeah. Kevin, I want to make sure that Massachusetts listeners get their money's worth here. Is there any insight you have into what's going on over there today that might be instructive to us? There's an open-ended question for you.
Yeah, what a softball. I think the elections in both Pittsfield and North Adams are going to be tight. Linda Tyre, during the preliminary election, when she was running in a race against Dan Bianchi and two other candidates, she won handily. I think she won with like 55% of the vote, if I'm not mistaken. It was a pretty decisive victory. I think that that margin is probably going to close. I can't predict who's going to come out on top in Pittsfield. Same thing for North Adams. I think, John Barrett, who is now the challenger to the incumbent Dick Alcombright, he was successful in the preliminary elections. I think that gap has probably tightened. That's just how I see it. But to be honest with you, I can't call it. I would be a fool to put any money down whatsoever to try to ascertain who's going to come out victorious today. And that's why it's important for folks to vote. I mean, after all of this hullabaloo and campaigning and what have you, now today's the day when the voters get to decide and have their say.
So Mike, for years, Albany was a Democratic machine, unlike anything except Chicago.
Famously.
And of course, you had Corning, and then you had all the other, you had
Whalen and Jennings.
Kathy
Sheehan.
Now we have Kathy Sheehan, who is a different kind of mayor.
But she's a Democrat.
But she's a progressive Democrat.
She is indeed, yeah.
And she comes up out of, the bowels, not a put down, of a progressive Democratic organization.
Well, she actually had her start in politics in Albany in schools, local PTAs and school district politics. And so did Patricia Fahey, the assembly member that represents the city of Albany. It's a new breed of Democrats. They're far different from the Erastus Corning Democrats. And so it's just various factions within the Democratic Party that has been at play in the city of Albany. And I think the progressives have gotten the upper hand now.
Well, yes. But is that limited? Because I think the number one thing that people want is protection. They want their bodies to be protected. They want their neighborhoods safe. Progressivism often means, you give a break to the people who are living in the hood, in the neighborhoods, and who are, often victimized themselves one way or another by crime. To me, the question really is, at what point does the scale tip so somebody says, I like this progressive or not, but I really do need protection. That's how Giuliani got elected in New York.
Well, it's a different tack on that is that the success that the city of Albany police have had in recent years under the previous police chief and under the current police chief, Brendan Cox, where they've had a good relationship with the community. Now, that's at stake right now because of news this week that a grand jury in Albany County has declined to find any criminal offenses in the death of a citizen of Albany who died back in April when he had a confrontation with police, Dante Ivey. And that is testing what was otherwise fairly good relationships between the city police and the residents, and certainly that's probably top priority for Kathy Sheehan. The other issue facing challenging...
Of course, she's not up for election.
No, she's not, but challenging her is the fact that the city is facing a huge budget deficit, and they're relying on the state to come through with state aid to help it to get through. Of course, the big argument is that they're the capital city. The population increases by 100,000 people every day as state workers come into town, and they're not getting back from the state proportionate state aid to help provide fire and police protection and infrastructure to support all that. And how that will play out and whether the governor will look fondly on the city and provide some necessary aid, we'll know. But she is not up for election this year, so we're talking about a future referendum on her her abilities as mayor that'll come up in a couple years.
So, Kevin and Mike, I want to ask you both as outstanding newspapermen to answer a question for me. Kevin, I notice that that it has gotten to be de rigueur for the candidates to round up as many letters of support for the editorial page as possible, and you publish hundreds of them. Has there ever been any investigation or looking into whether or not the candidates themselves are responsible for all of that?
Oh, I'm absolutely without a doubt, candidates are encouraging their supporters to write in letters, and you know, probably lobbying them, and you know, and doing all of that. You know, there have been a few instances too where, you know, and I'm sure maybe Mike has seen this too at the TU, where you actually, you know, through your checking of letter writers, actually find out that a person whose name is at the end of the letter didn't actually write the letter, and you never sees the light of day by publication.
Well, we verify letters, you know,
absolutely.
And we talk
but
to the
But you don't
writers.
Verify emails. You
no,
don't
no,
verify
no, online comments,
comments
yeah. Right, which is another issue. But that's okay. But any letter that's printed on our editorial page, we've spoken to the writer to verify it. We've called them after we've received it. But you're right, Kevin. I mean, there's sometimes letters come in and they're written very similarly. Sometimes they're almost the same letter. You can see that somebody, an operative in the political party, is finding people to sign their names on the letters. And some of those do get by and get in, but we try to look for those and filter those out. It's impossible to know if someone was completely original or they got urged to write something or somebody wrote something for them.
Last chance to get in, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Participation on Election Day is very important.
Alan, let me ask you this as
Please.
A political scientist.
Please.
It was 75 degrees and sunny and beautiful when I was coming over here to the
right.
studio today.
Yep.
Does that positively impact turnout, or when it gets too nice, does it have a negative impact?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, you'd rather go vote, you know, when it's 75 degrees and you can walk to the polling place as opposed to having to go when it's 30 degrees or 29 degrees, as it was the other day, and have to, you know, vote in a dripping rain. But what do I really know, you know, about that? I am extraordinarily upset by the lack of participation in these elections. And then people moan and groan when the city or in Great Barrington, you know, even my little place there, the main street doesn't look like people wanted it to look, and everything else, and whether they should build a big hotel and then in a street that's already got a lot of cars on it. There is an articulation about how people just don't like what their politicians are doing, but they don't want to involve themselves in selecting them. Kevin, what do you think?
No, absolutely. You hear a lot of that locally. You know, even though it's probably, you know, more notorious for, you know, people to have those assumptions about their national candidates. But you know, there's definitely, you know, divides in Pittsfield and in North Adams. You know, certain you know, camps of thought, so to speak. You know, that you know, in different side, two sides playing against each other. You know, it's that happens all the time.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And the enigma here, of course, is that once somebody gets into office, the chance of them being ousted is almost negligible.
They really have to mess up to get knocked out of office. It's built absolutely in favor of incumbents. In the city of Troy, though, there's term limits. So that does take care of it. I don't think there's any in the capital region besides Troy. Of course, the city of New York has two term limits for the mayor.
Except when Bloomberg is mayor. And then
he's able to manipulate it to get a third term.
Then he got a third term. But if the population had the chance to vote on term limits, they would definitely vote for them. There's no
question. Well, as Mario Cuomo once said, there are term limits. They're called elections.
Well, yes, I hear that. Let's go to Fred in Springfield Park. Okay, Fred, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, gentlemen. A quick question. This is out of your district. What is the likelihood of incumbents being reelected when property tax, school tax has been increased 200%, sometimes 300%.
Well, I don't know your particular...
Town of Worthing. You have a repeater station here.
Right. Oh, no, I know, but I don't know what the particulars are on this. But I'm going to go way out on a ledge and tell you that since people don't really know what the issues are, and since incumbents are returned at an incredible rate, that the chances are the incumbent gets returned.
Statistically, that's true, but an issue like property taxes can be the downfall of an incumbent.
People don't really know what they're doing. Hey, you know, Fred, you're breaking the law. You keep your radio on. Because that's okay. There's a 7-second delay, and that could become very confusing and, you know, make you, you know, have vertigo. But in any case, Fred, I'd love it for you to drop me an email at alan@wamc.org and say, see, Alan, you were wrong. Okay? Thanks a lot, Fred. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I'm sorry, Mike.
No, I was going to say one of the pitfalls of not participating is that the fringes tend to get their people out, and then they end up controlling things.
We call that a Republican primary.
Well, a Republican primary, you're seeing it in Congress right now. And it can happen at the local level.
That's an excellent point, Mike. Yeah. I can't agree with you more.
Yeah. And you see it in Berkshire County at all, you know, Kevin?
Oh, absolutely. The interesting thing about the Berkshires is that it's among those folks who are registered Democrat or Republican, the overwhelming majority is Democrat. As a matter of fact, as a percentage, you know, the Berkshires are usually the third highest democratically registered county in the Commonwealth, sometimes maybe the second only to the Suffolk County, which has Boston in it. A huge chunk of people also too are unenrolled. Who are members of neither Democrats or Republicans.
Okay. Kevin, I'm sorry.
Interesting thing.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I got to tell you that support for the Vox Pop comes from Washington County Tourism and the towns and villages they're in, featuring art venues, holiday happenings, farmers markets, craft beverage, and specialty shops for holiday gift giving. WashingtonNewYork.com, at WashingtonNY.com. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering workshops in a farm setting, open 3 weekends in November. Make your own glass-blown ornaments. Work from over 200 artists, snowfarm.org, and Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, New York, an open congregation welcoming the Jewish community and visitors for Shabbat, holiday services, their religious school, cultural programs, and more, saratogasinai.org. Okay, thanks for joining us. Remember, the conversation continues. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Susie Chekai. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Kevin, we love you. And Mike,
thank
same
you.
To you.
Thank you, Alan.